welcome to another episode of the Evolution Exchange podcast. Today I am joined with Dimitri, O'Connor and Rui to talk about where we can improve as leaders. As usual, what we're going to do is give ourselves a round of introductions. Dimitri, do you want to introduce yourself first?
Sure. Hello, everyone. Sure. Hello, everyone. My name is Dmitry Vasan, and I'm engineering manager at Klarna. I have about 10 years of experience, and during my career, I have managed and leaded various teams, especially cross-functional one, focusing on the front-end, back-end, data engineering. And I participated in different areas, such as hospitality, analytics, banking. And each of the team made a significant footprint on my career. I'm passionate about helping them to strive and achieve not only company objectives, but personal growth as well. Apart from work, my main interests are traveling and driving, especially when it's combined into the road trips. It's amazing. What's about you, Rui?
Yeah, thank you, Dimitri. And hello, everyone. My name is Rui, and I am an engineering manager currently working for Volvo Cars. And I started working as an engineering manager around 3 years ago. Mainly on the front-end domain, but also delving a little bit into full-stack, cross-functional teams in the multiple organizations. I think I have a very strong passion for self-development, watching engineers grow and actually building teams, seeing teams mature, seeing how they evolve as well. I really appreciate communication, the way that can drive corporations and individuals forward. And aside from work, I really enjoy traveling, like you also mentioned, Dimitrio. I have a strong interest for music. I play and produce music myself. I like to photograph, and I like doing podcasts as well. So here I am.
Amazing. And then Gunnar?
Okay. Hello, my name is Gunnar. I'm employed by a company called Eika. Eika is a bank and insurance company. I'm part of insurance part. We have employees in Oslo and Hamar. I'm the manager of 15 employers and UX designers and testers in Hamar. In addition, I'm team lead for three teams. I have two adult boys, age 23 and 19. Passionate work, to see people grow as a manager. That's my passion. And my passion privately is training and golf and in general being active.
Amazing, perfect. Well, thank you so much for those introductions.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
So as normal, now what we're going to do, everyone's prepared a question or subtopic for the conversation. So we're going to go around, everybody can have a bit of time to talk about, ask some follow-up points and just get a conversation really flowing. We're going to come back to you, Dimitrio. So go to your question first.
Cool. And as we started to discuss about the leadership and leaders as well, I would like not only focus on myself or yourself, folks, but how do you help your rappers grow as leaders themselves? And how does this reflect on you as leader? Because for me, it's a very mature question that helps not only you, but the team and organization to grow. In this case, we can create a pipeline for the leadership position in the future. We can fulfill the position of leadership in the company. And we can learn from our efforts as well, because what could be the most interesting learning process rather than teaching? Mm-hmm. What do you think about this?
So, I mean, we're talking about mainly how to, what are the main challenges of growing teams while you also grow as a leader? We're talking about both of those things, like in how do we make a parallel between those things, right, in general?
I think it's more about how you can delegate and how you can help your efforts grow as a leaders. So to step back
team members
sometimes.
Then, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. I think, well, I can add a few things there to begin. I think it starts with trust. I think it starts with building trust. Feels that this is almost a cliche at this point, how much we talk about trust, especially in the beginning, but it's I think it's because it's that important, right? That when you start, one thing that I was actually just discussing with my team in the previous, we had a workshop on you know, ways of working and improving the, you know, improving process in general, is that how do you actually first address trust when you start, when you join a new team? Do you trust people by default, or you think that trust by default should be earned or won over or something like that? Personally, I think you should always start by trusting by default and giving people the benefit of the doubt always, because that enables people to do their best without feeling judged. And I think that's important in the beginning. It shows the kind of culture that is present, not only in your team, but in the company in general, because you ultimately you represent the company you work for. So I would throw that out there. I think trust is a huge thing, and enabling trust. Basically, I say that from a leadership position who reports to a more senior leadership position, is that if I feel my manager trusts me, that motivates me. And that actually enables me to do things and to actually move forward, right? So having trust and earning trust, I think it's a huge thing. I can give the word to you, also you guys to actually add a bit more. Yeah,
I definitely agree, but it's very interesting. You mentioned regarding start when you join a new team, you start and trust people by default, like with zero judgment. But what about the team members? Does everyone will trust you?
Well, that's definitely a good question. Yeah,
not automatically, but I think that trust is
definitely not
essential. When you're joining a new team, you have to earn the trust, and you come. And I think my experience is when you observe and get to know people, have one-to-ones, and be open, and they start to trust you, and you can trust them. That it's a process.
You brought up one thing there, Gunnar, which is one-to-ones. I think that they are becoming more and more part of corporate culture in general and team dynamics. But there is still a lot of. I've talked to many people in other organizations, or even friend of mine, where, and not to mention people who work in completely different industries, where one-on-ones just don't exist. There's no such thing. You know, you basically meet with your manager once a year for a salary talk that is usually 5 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And I've heard stories like, people sometimes go on literally years without even being asked how they're doing. Which to me, that sounds borderline unbelievable, but that does happen. So I think that's one way to actually establish trust is to actually, go through the process of establishing one-on-ones with every single person in your team, and not only in your team, but actually, stakeholders, peers, meeting people. And I think also showing vulnerability whenever required. You shouldn't be a robot, right? Like as someone who has direct reports. And I think this is a mistake that I believe many new managers make. I sure as hell did that myself when I was starting out, is that you should never show any vulnerability, because you have an example to set. And because of that, you can show vulnerability. But I think that's a huge mistake when it comes to building trust, because people will feel that.
Yeah. And I was listening to a previous podcast, and it was discussing to make changes fast or later if you are new in a team. So I think it's very smart to observe and doing things in steps if you like to change things. And then after you have meetings with the team and retros and stand-ups, not just be focused on the tasks, but have icebreakers. Have how was the weekend?
Yep.
What have you done last night, and so on. And then you start to have a conversation and people start opening up, and then you get to know better what they are like in person.
Yeah, I agree. And while trust is still the most crucial part of the engaging team in the work process and establishing relationship, did you have any experience of supporting your efforts to grow as leaders? If coming back to my question, because I have a great example. Recently in the team, I decided to step back regarding the one project, and it's showcased that the one engineer in my team showcased it as perfect leader with great ambitions and desire to grow further. And I think that it's not only supported him, but I found that there are some common mistakes that everyone can do as a newborn leader, newborn manager. And these lessons, of course, affect a team, and it supports me to develop myself as a leader as well. So do you have such examples? I would be curious to listen.
Quite a few, yeah. I think you touched on a really important point that it's kind of tied to my question that I also brought up, which is about letting go, but we can talk about that later. But it's kind of related to that point. Yeah, absolutely. I think that one very simple thing is to delegate. It's to actually start delegating little things, and that can be as simple as you can't attend a stand-up or a retro or a showcase or a refinement or whatever the case may be, and you basically say, okay, can someone else drive this? So asking that question, you're already testing quite a few things because you are observing the level of proactivity of the different members in your team, who's going to step up, basically, right? And if the same person steps up all the time and you want to explore that dynamic, then you can even joke about it, because sometimes whenever there's multiple times where I just can't attend stand-ups because I'm double booked or whatever, right? That's very common. And usually what happens is there is one individual member in my team who tends to step up and actually drive the stand-up. The last time I couldn't attend the stand-up, I literally said, okay, I cannot attend the stand-up today. I'm double booked. Can somebody else drive it? And then in parentheses, I said, if this person is not this individual, then you get extra points, right? So kind of like breaking the ice a little bit and also encouraging everybody else to participate. So delegation, I think that's a big one.
Yeah, give them a responsibility and follow them up with one-to-ones and giving constructive feedbacks.
But let me actually follow this up with, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
And also, I think it's also important to establish a kind of, it's allowed to fail culture.
If you know what I mean. 100%, 100%, yes. 100%, yeah.
If you do that, you also establish trust.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, people could, there's still a lot of working cultures where people are, you're afraid to fail, and you're basically... Yeah. And that leads to a bunch of problems because you basically don't address your tickets properly. You kind of open a PR that is faulty, and you don't bring that up on stand up, for example, because you're afraid of judgment. It's one thing that it's really important to, I think, and this is tied to trust, which is basically saying, first of all, it's okay to fail, and also just giving feedback. Another thing that is also tied to this, I believe, is give constructive feedback usually in private, right? If you're giving constructive feedback, you don't want people to feel that they're being put on the spot. So if you want to praise them, absolutely, you can do that in a public arena. And even that is debatable because some people just don't like that, right? But as a golden rule, I would say that if you want to praise, do it in public. And if you want to criticize, do it, but do it in private.
No, for sure. It's golden rule.
But I was going to follow that up with one thing, because we talked about delegation. I think we can all agree that delegation is a good way to, you know, enable other people to become leaders, even if that's the long-term plan. But how do you deal with situations where you want people to step up and you say, okay, can anybody basically volunteer and take the lead on this particular meeting or cadence or event or whatever, and nobody steps up? Do you basically go the next step and you step up instead, or do you take a more, let's say, maybe a more democratic approach? How do you basically solve a situation like this?
From my opinion, I will pick it up. I can describe why. Of course, anyway, you have an advance. You have established growth plan for everyone in the team. So you understand ambitions, you understand the career growth the person would like to achieve. And for one or another situation, you can have a clear vision that this particular delegation will support exactly on this growth path for such position or for anything connected to it. So if some person would like to step up in the future as a domain architect, as a company architect, of course, it's more important that he will be picked up to demonstrate architecture, to define architecture, to work with this. And it has no sense to pick up this person, for example, to work with product people. And because it's mismatching his expectation, it's mismatching. And for me, it's pretty common that not all engineers ready to speak up, especially in the Slack, because they worry to fail. And it's, of course, a big problem. But this is something that you also, as a leader, should work on there one-on-ones and establish trust and showcase that it's not a problematic. But still, personal affairs could be present.
That's a really, I just want to add there that it's kind of, if you're a good leader, it's your responsibility to actually know this,
of
right?
Course.
If you're delegating something, you should combine who is more qualified to do this with who needs to do this more, right? And that's where I think there's a lot of nuance.
Yeah. For example, in my previous company, I had one-to-ones with a person, and he wanted to step up, take more place, space. I made him a Scrum Master. He was terrified, but he knew I had his back. Mm-hmm. And he always gave feedback.
But how can you elaborate a bit on how did you deal with the terrified part? How did you bring comfort to that situation?
I had feedback after each week, after stand-ups, feedbacks to be more specific, how to delegate the task, or yeah, in general, how to run the stand-up. And he also had some retros running. So he was terrified in the start, and there's always some superstars in the team, you know that. So I had his back.
But that's also where I think we should resist the temptation of delegating stuff like, for example, running a retro always to the same individual. Because you know that person can do the job, right? It's easy.
Yeah.
But if you have a member in the team who wants to become, say, let's say an EM, for example, there's a lot of things where you need to coach this person to do. One is to actually drive and you know, drive events and take initiative, et cetera. But it's also communication.
Yeah.
So basically, one thing I encourage some of my direct reports who want to, you know, go towards a career that that includes leadership, do more interviews, basically. Do more interviews, you know, work on communication, do showcases, drive showcases, like speak to a large number of people, things like that.
Exactly. And I would like to add that team stuff like retros, stand-ups is pretty easy. It's not so common that engineers not want to do it. But when it's coming to the stakeholders management, when it requires some presentation, demos, it's much more difficult. And here I had the personal experience to coach a person to grow and start to do it. And of course, it took like half a year. And basically, it's one-on-ones, but not only. I think that the most important exactly is providing feedback where it's what was wrong. But the most important also to provide what was good and what was excellent. I think that it's encourage people, but in all this process, we should not forget about very intimate part, like a person psychotype, like how a person react to one or another situation, because some people are more optimistic by life, some person more pessimistic by life, and it of course very changeable, depends on the situation, how you need to structure your feedback and structure your one-on-ones and structure your coaching process.
And also ask the question about it, how you grow as a leader when you delegate responsibility, or you make people grow and take leadership. But I think that's, if you are a commitment to the success, you will also enhance your leadership qualities.
I think one of the things that makes you grow the most as a leader is when you are challenged, is when you have uncomfortable conversations, when people say no to you, or when you just basically, I think that when you have people that are more disagreeable in general, it's uncomfortable, right? But no question that in my experience, whenever you go into meetings, and this happens a lot in one-on-ones, where you know there is something brewing there is an issue, there is a communication problem or something of the sort, and you know that you're going to run into a potential argument, you are forced to work on your own communication skills to have the best outcome in those, you know, in those more difficult situations. I think that that's what makes you grow the most. It's actually going through that, you know, discomfort in general.
I've got a question. So before you guys talked about trust and having that trust with your reports to reflect, you know, different things, with delegation, how important is you trusting your team and them trusting you in order to effectively delegate?
It's crucial. Without it, it will not work in both ways. And I would say that the most important is the team trusts you, because in this case, they can step up and take this delegation and take this as their routine. Otherwise, it will be very challenging. And at the same time, it's important that you trust your team and can delegate. I would say that for me, the biggest reflection on the delegation and supporting myself as a leader, it was exactly delegate and see that maybe person not doing it in the way that I would like to do, and I predicted that he will do it in this way. Meanwhile, I trusted him like 100%. And to continue supporting during the meeting, continue to maybe a bit navigate to the right direction. It was the biggest lesson for myself.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that, I mean, it's actually very hard to delegate if there are, again, going back to these discomfortable situations, or rather uncomfortable, going back to these uncomfortable situations, you don't feel that is as organic whenever you are delegating something and putting that trust into a person who, let's say, doesn't like you, or there is attrition there. And sometimes you know this person is the right person for the job, but because you have this attrition, you basically delegate to someone else. I really think that as leaders, it's extremely important to resist that temptation of taking the easiest path. And again, if there are such situations, you basically never fix them by waiting or by postponing them. I mean, you have to have those uncomfortable discussions.
Yeah.
Period. Right. If that affects your day-to-day work, if it affects your ability to delegate, that's a clear sign you should address those situations basically as soon as you can.
Okay. Yeah, and I think that it's exactly what's improve you as a leader, this process.
Well, do you think, Gunnar?
Yeah, I totally agree with Rui. Yeah.
Perfect. The reason I ask is I see a lot of, obviously I speak to a lot of different teams every day, and one of the things that I see people fail with quite a lot is that they have a very set thing in their mind of, I'm going to delegate this thing to you, and I trust you to do it, but I want you to do it in the exact same way that I would do it. And then this person does it in a different way, and they're like, whoa. Well, what do you mean you took your own initiative to do that? Like, and that's what I mean with the trust. I think if you're delegating it, you should absolutely trust that no matter how this person goes around it, it's going to get that same result and it's going to be effective.
I wouldn't go as far as saying no matter how the person goes around it, because I think that's all also tied to process, right? If your team is mature enough, there is going to be a certain way of doing things. There's going to be guidelines there. That being said, it's not necessarily the way you personally want it to be done, because I think that actually that reveals actually a pretty considerable lack of trust in the person. You're not doing it exactly like I said. Of course, if you're delegating, you should expect some flexibility there. People do things differently, but that being said, as teams mature, something else that matures is process, is the way things are done, right? You know, you are driving a feature development. It's expected that you create a pull request. That pull request is reviewed by multiple people if needed, depending on what you agreed on as a team. And, that pull request should be in your, Jira board or whatever tool you keep track of your tasks. Everybody should know that PR is in this particular state. That PR should eventually have a sign off from QA. But that all of that is tied to how process is defined and not to what you as the EM or PM or whoever, or DM even, wants it to be done. It's not a personal thing. It's about how the team defines it.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. I would like to add that delegation is not to give some task and forget about this. You still continue to monitor it time to time to have sync ups. And of course, you're following up on the steps, how it's accomplished. And it's very important to provide feedback in the middle if something's going wrong and not wait like, okay, I delegated this important feature to you and you didn't provide it correctly. You're wrong. But it's your responsibility as the leader to have control under the things and ensure that process going smoothly.
So following up is a huge one. And I would also add that, I mean, if you are running dailies, such situations should never happen, right? Because basically, if somebody is driving a feature that is tied to a ticket, and in a day-to-day basis, you will know what's the status on that ticket, because that's basically what stand-ups are for, and that, one of many things. Yeah,
I would argue about the stand-ups are for status check. I think that many companies going out from it, and it's mostly focusing on the blockers, because this exactly status is not providing a lot of details, that even under some feature development, like what is the status here? Okay, it's QA one, but between the development and QA part could be additional 10 or 11 steps that are not present on the stand-up, and at the end, this information is still missing. So I think that it's more important that person who is responsible, whom you delegated in case of the stand-up on your example, is there providing more roadblocks and more problems that he faces and he needs support. This is much more helpful.
Absolutely. I actually agree with that. What I'm saying is that, for example, if somebody who you delegated an issue to is working on a ticket, and imagine that there are no blockers, we have a happy path scenario. Eventually, that person will bring to the team's awareness that, okay, there's now a PR about this that is now on the review column in Jira. So anybody can pick it up and review. So that's also what stand-ups are for. I wouldn't put it in the status report kind of format, because I agree it's more about if there is any issues on what you're doing that should be brought to the team's awareness. But if it's going well, if it's ready for review, the team should also be aware. So that's I think that adds more value just in general.
Agree.
Perfect. Well, Gunnar, should we move on to your questions?
Yeah. Let me see. What was that? If there was we are in a process now for merging two companies. Change management and empathic leadership, if there is any conflict there, as you can see, or...
So the question is...
It was a high-level question,
There is a conflict between change management and authentic leadership.
Empathic leadership.
Or empathic, okay, yeah. Of course there is.
Is it?
The short answer, I would say. Yeah, of course, because if you... Well, I guess it depends on the situation.
Or is it complementary?
Again, I think it depends, because if you are, let's say you take over a team that is very mature and very comfortable and you want to change ways of working drastically, that's a huge change. And actually to undergo that kind of transformation while keeping everything, while maintaining that empathy could be hard, because you're probably going to be faced with resistance. Typically, people that work very comfortably they won't change as easily, of course. You can argue this will depend on the person, but in general, right, there's usually some resistance to change. So I think you combine that with the empathetic leadership through, I don't want to say too much for now, but I would say that for like metrics and feedback loops and working on a consistent process that actually proves the point that where you want the team to go adds more value than where they are right now, because changing things just because. I think it's something that some leaders, it's a mistake that some leaders do, to give the illusion that they are, you know, giving value to the team just by changing things. But sometimes you don't even have to change anything. It highly depends on the situation.
Yeah, but it's both is a clear common understanding and clear communication involving. You have support, you have adoption, you have learning and development for both. So kind of similar in my head, but I was looking for if you could see any conflicts, or of course there will be resistance, but I don't know.
I would partly disagree with Roy here, because I don't think there is a conflict here. I don't ever think that empathic leadership could be in conflict with something, because it's in general going through to not have any conflict and resolve it before it existed ever. From my understanding, any changes could be painful, of course, and it's okay. And here is you come in as empathic leader to resolve this pain and provide as the maximum support as you can. Of course, could be layoffs, could be some other stuff, and it's very hard to be empathic when you need to tell for team members, especially if you work it with them for such a long period of time, unfortunately they part. But the way how you do it, the way how you support them, even you can provide some recommendation, you can support them as they're looking for a new place, you can give the best compensation. It's also empathic leadership, because empathic is not to make people life painless, it's about make life better and support people where you can.
Mm-hmm. I don't really disagree with that. I think that the way I say it depends on the situation is, again, it depends on some teams. Actually, I think it's easier to actually combine the two when a team is struggling, basically, and there is this awareness that they're struggling, and you bring in a new process and combine. I agree that combining that with an empathetic approach is always a good thing, but being empathetic doesn't mean that people will always willingly change, even if you have a good case for that. And I think that's where it ties to comfort. I think it's an effective combination. Empathy is always important, obviously, but it's an important combination of empathy with well-defined process to actually, basically, you need to prove why you're changing things. What metrics are you using? What steps are you going to implement? And that's also tied to trust, back to what we discussed previously.
Yeah, I agree. But in my head, empathic leadership is a strength when you come into change management. If you have the empathic in bottom, it's a strength when it comes to change management. Or is it wrong?
Sorry, say that again, Guren.
Have the empathic leadership, it's a natural thing for you. Change management is more easier if you have that in common.
I agree, because if you feel like if you have empathy as one in the core state of yourself, then you can feel how people react on one to another change, and you can predict how people will react. And in this case, you can prepare these changes in more easy way. I think that changes, as I told already, is all time painful. And will be many people who will resist, who will disagree, who will tell that before it was bad. But the point that you can, with empathy, you can find a right word for each personality. And you can find one word and one sentence. Okay, this is good because of one. Each person will have their own opinion, and you need to find this key to open the box, how you will put the right things.
Mm. Yeah, I pretty much agree with that. I mean, that's also tied to how easily people get to know you, right? And I think that's particularly applicable if you're a new manager and you're coming in and you come from a place of empathy. But even if you are very experienced and you can connect with people, one thing that I think is tempting is to change things too quick. So I think the pace is also very important. Changing things little by little, I think it's much more effective, because opening up the team to try something new under the compromise that, and the understanding that if things don't work out, you can always try something else. It's not, nothing is really set in stone. So I think that creates human connections with people in the team much more effectively.
Yeah.
Because you kind of give them this reassurance, right? If it works, great. If it doesn't work, it's not the end of the world. We can, regroup and try something else.
Yeah.
I mean, God, do you have any kind of follow-on questions from that?
No, not really. I was just interested in both of them's point of view. So, yeah.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, and then, Rui, I feel like we've spoken about your question of delegation. So if it's okay with you, I'm not going to come back to it. But is there anything else that you think where you have to improve as a leader is like, the most important thing that people might not know who are listening, who are more junior leaders?
I think not necessarily tied to delegation, but I think the concept of letting go in general is something that a lot of new leaders, you can say it's a mistake, but it's something that new leaders do a lot, because you want, not only you want to prove yourself, but you also want to make an impact. So you want to do, you take a lot of responsibility, and then in some situations you want to do everything yourself. So I could open up the forum for that. Is like, how do you actually let go? And you can argue, what do you pick? How do you pick and choose when you have too much on your plate, which I would argue happens all the time. Especially as engineering managers, there is multiple responsibilities that you have. There's people management. You need to steer technical decisions. You need to provide a sense of direction to the team. You need to take care of rituals. You need to use, like, there's personal developments that you also are very much tied to. There's recruitment. There's a bunch of things, right? how do you actually pick and choose? How do you prioritize that? In other words, how do you attempt to let go when there's too much?
I would like to add, it's also a culture. It's something that we as leaders should support, culture of continuous learning, culture of supporting, culture of showcasing that it's okay to ask for help. Because delegation is not every time that you only delegate for growth, it's sometimes just ask for help because you don't have time, you don't have possibility to look into it right away. It's pretty important.
What do you want to delegate, really?
Well, it depends on the situation, but for, like, let's say that there
is,
are
is there something
where,
you won't let go?
Oh, there's always something, right? But I think that depends on the time. Let's say that, for example, you are there is this time of the year where you are very involved with growth talks or salary discussions. You want to prepare things. You want to, you know, you want to build your cases. You want to give feedback properly. It's an important time for your direct reports, and you just basically don't have nowhere near as much time to drive the team rituals in general. So that is something that can be done through delegation, but something that we can also discuss. How do you prioritize those things? Because there are things that you just can't delegate, right? Like if you want to do a values interview, I personally think it's really important that whoever I interview to join the team fits the team culture and values. And okay, that's actually a good example, because that's something that I personally have a really hard time letting go and basically telling another EM to interview in my stead because I have 15 other things to do. When it comes to recruitment, I tend to prioritize that pretty much all the time. And that can be something that, you know, you can argue that doesn't have to be like that all the time. I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, actually.
Yeah, I think growth talks and one-to-one, you can delegate that. And the rituals, back to trust in the team and who can take this responsibility. It's
okay. I can actually even bring a concrete example now. So okay. I am going to go on parental leave in July this year. For 5 months, I'm not going to be here. And right now, I clearly am not struggling, but I see the challenges brewing that, for example, I think a lot about this, that I need to find a person to fill in this slot in the team, for example. I need to recruit this person to fill in this slot, or I need to find somebody to that's going to effectively replace me in this arena or that arena, right? Let's discuss. How would you deal with something like that, you know, going towards a time where you know you won't be here for a very long time? And of course, another important thing here is that there is this concern. I mean, imagine that you're going to be away from your team for half a year. You come back and you realize that another EM who happens to be a lot better, more experienced, took over. How do you deal with that? These are, you know, real situations that would could affect you, right?
I don't know, Roy. You're talking so much regarding the team rituals. Maybe you may need to optimize them. Contact me in the LinkedIn. I can help you to do it. But apart of it, joke, of course, I think that it's pretty interesting question. But what do you do when you're going on vacation for 3 weeks? I mean, team is still there and it's working well. I don't think that team rituals or whatever, it should be a blocker to replace it. It's only to support team, not to be a blocker. The same way as the recruiting and other things. Of course, there is a budget in whatever it's where teammates could not have access due to the position, but it could be delegated to your manager and it shouldn't be a problem.
A couple of things there. First of all, the team rituals and the recruitment are, I don't think you would, the criteria to find a replacement for those two things are quite different. I don't think there would be much of an issue with the delegating anything related to team rituals. But when it comes to finding people for the team when you are away, that's, I think, is a much pressing challenge. And also, there is a difference between vacation when it's two or three different weeks where you can plan things ahead for that period of time entirely, and a much more longer period when, for example, you go on parental leave and you know you're going to be months away. It's much harder to actually prepare the team for such a long time period, right? So that's where I think that the challenge is a bit different.
Yeah, and maybe you should start a transition period before you're leaving.
Handover periods.
Yeah, it makes sense. And still, interesting question, how you going to help the recruitment while you will be out of the team, while you will be on the parental leave? Still, you will need to delegate it to someone who you trust. In this case, I think that if you can find someone in the team, you can try to find inside of the company. What do you think about this? It's also a case.
Yeah, I mean, of course, that if we're talking about recruitment, it doesn't necessarily have to be external, right? That can always be something that can be found internally. There's an advantage to that even, because there's usually an assumption that the cultural fit is already there because the person is already working in the same company as you. So that's one thing that can help. That's one approach, yeah. Funny thing is that there are so many elements to this when you are thinking about long-term delegation that, you know, can be tied to this idea of letting go and actually not trying to hold control in all those elements.
Yeah. Are you afraid of losing the control when you're back?
Maybe a little bit, because maybe a little bit, in the sense that this might be tied to cultural incompatibilities. What if someone else takes over the team that does not drive the team in the direction you would like? You could even argue that's your responsibility, because you should be involved in whoever else takes over.
Yeah. So I think that plan, prepare, and before delegating, think over through the task and decide who's the best suited for it. So have you started with that? Or,
for example, yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean,
and sit down and make a plan and delegate.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think your direct manager has a pretty big impact in that when it comes to those kinds of changes. A long-term handover plan, I think, is a must here. And also, one thing that one staff engineer in that my team works with recently, he also went on parental leave for a period of something like 4 months or so. What he did was actually leaving a document with, first off, a handover document, then that also had a huge amount of challenges that we haven't addressed yet, that also gives us a sense of direction and of things to address while this person was away. I found that very, it was inspirational in a way, because it kind of addresses this situation. If you know you're going to be away for a very long time, but you have a large list of requirements that, or just issues of whatever kind that you want your replacement or somebody else to address, that's a way to actually, I think, compromise this to some degree.
Do you have some recruitments when you're away?
I mean, not only recruitments, but for example, promotions.
Yeah.
What if you have this person you really want to promote, but when the actual promotion happens, you're not going to be here? How do you do with that?
I mean, it's the same. For me, personally, it's the same like with vacation. What will be if it's a promotion period when you are on vacation? You can handle it because, I don't know, you have academy and you can cancel it. In this case, what you will do? You will prepare cases in advance. You will leave some handover plan, and another people will just follow it up. I think that any period of time when you out of work due to sickness, due to vacation, due to some unexpected stuff, it's the same. It's just scalable. It's one day, it's 1 week, it's 1 month, it's 1 year. It still could scale at the same process. You need to provide the most important points of your routine work that you need to do based on the priorities. And of course, there is a possibility of mistakes, but it's what we discussed. People will not follow the process exactly as you predict they will follow, and you just need to trust.
I'm gonna have to jump in there and kind of help wrap this up. It's been a really interesting conversation. I really hope the three of you kind of continue this, maybe off the recording too, especially to see the, like, what everybody else would do, but also be interested to anyone listening to send in their ideas of what they've done in this situation, and we can send it over to Rui too. But no, thank you so much, guys, for your opinions. It's been great to listen to, and yeah, thank you so much for joining.